Hello there, Mr. and Mrs. America. It's back to the roundtable. 11 minutes after 9 o'clock, you know, it's the roundtable panel. Joe is a little bit delayed. I'm Ray Graff here, just temporarily treading water with you at panel@wamc.org. And the panel today, I'll introduce them while we wait. It's, this is great. Communications consultant Joe Bonilla is here. Good morning.
How are you, Ray?
You always come on a snowy day.
You know, it's either snowing.
Like Santa Claus?
No, not really. No. But
yes. You remind me of Santa Claus.
Oh, really? A Puerto Rican Santa Claus? That's fine. Yeah. That's okay.
Also here today is Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
So nice to have you here.
It is so nice to be here, and you know, despite all the weather.
Oh my gosh! And then somebody else. Look what the cat dragged in.
It's one by one.
Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. He's taking off his coat. He'll be here with you in a moment.
As long as you said cat and not raccoon.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
You know, Alan Shartok is here as well. You look very happy, sir.
Well, I am. This is a very, very, very distinguished panel.
Indeed.
And everybody...
You're self-accepted.
Yes.
Yes.
Everybody had a WAMC sweatshirt except for Jen. And I went out, made sure she had one so she'd be in the proper uniform. But I don't know whether David Soares has an official WAMC...
David, just tell him yes, you do have one, and then we can.
Do you have one
on.
Of these?
I do not have one.
Oh well, they'll bring one
no.
in. They'll bring one in. They'll know the appropriate size. And so I'm happy to be here, and I'm very happy this morning.
And why, sir, are you happy?
Well, a couple of things happened overnight. One of which I don't want to mention. But the other thing that was
know.
Really
I don't know and ask. Just don't ask. Whatever it is.
Well, I think the justice system has proved to be at least temporarily effective. And then the other thing that happened is that the Pennsylvania election, by a few votes, but anyway, seems to have elected the Democrat.
Okay, and this, I'm sure, is on Joe's topic list. And Joe, if you're just tuning in, Joe Donahue will be here. He's running a little bit late. I don't want to steal any of his thunder by going into these topics in advance.
I wouldn't worry about that.
Really?
You know, there's so much to talk about today. It's unbelievable. Then, of course, there's Tillerson.
Right.
The whole Tillerson thing, which is
yesterday.
Just unbelievable.
When was the last time that a representative of our federal government was fired, and that's literally the third thing to talk about on a list?
That's
of,
third
right.
or fourth,
mm-hmm.
right.
Third or fourth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's right. And, you know, the thing about Tillerson is I watched him speaking. He was shaken. Mm. He was really shaken. You would think the guy who was the head of Exxon would have, you know, not been upset by this. But apparently, I guess when you get fired in life, it's often been described, being fired is described as one of the three things, the worst things. The first, I think, is death. A death in your family, or is death?
Yeah.
This, what are you looking?
No, keep
uncomfortable
going.
Here?
I just wanted to know whether hosting the roundtable panel is on the list.
And the second is being fired is right up there. You get, you know, it really deals with your whole sense of self-worth. You know what I mean?
What third?
Yeah.
And then the third, what was the third? Death. Taxes.
Gail Sayers, I think, right?
No.
I am third.
Taxes? The third. What was the third? Death? Being fired? I forget what the third one was. But
your team losing
Joe?
In the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would just like to caution you that you are speaking in a certain tone to the head of the Berkshire Mafia. So
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I would be,
and you had the underboss here with Jen?
Holy mackerel. That's interesting.
And, you know, and the thing about Jen that's so extraordinary is no matter what snow, no matter how many... inches of ice and everything else, she gets here
yeah.
and puts me to shame because there are days
good.
I don't do it.
I'm glad you said
Alan's
that.
Jen has That's why he's wearing a Berkshire Eagle hat this morning.
Jen has yeah. had practice climbing over those new walls that Trump was out there.
Prototypes?
Looking yeah. at prototypes. Jen climbs over snowbanks. You know.
Did you, you mentioned the whole raccoon thing, David Soares. And I don't know if that's on. Is that on Joe's topic list today?
I just don't want to talk about.
Oh, you don't want to talk about it?
Please.
I heard them dispatched on the scanner in the newsroom.
Don't say dispatched, please.
You know,
don't say words.
The raccoon got dispatched.
That's essentially what David's trying to say. In defense, and I don't know the details, but in defense, there are places you cannot discharge your weapon. And so sometimes, when a deer is hit and still alive, an officer will dispatch that deer for humanitarian reasons.
Two words: animal control.
Okay, All right. But, I mean, if you got a rabid animal running around, and that's what the police call said on the scanner, there's a possibly rabid raccoon. Deal with it.
You know, I am old enough to remember the Malachi Crunch. The
Me too.
Back in the happy days.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's ever applied the Malachi Crunch to dispatching an animal.
I'm not saying it was right, but I'm saying a defense attorney might make that case, that we couldn't dispatch a weapon. It was a parking lot. It was a public place.
The thing about you, Ray, which is so interesting to me, is that when you want to make a statement, it always is somebody else might say.
No. To be clear.
The argument might be made.
So just asking for a friend.
Right, yeah. Right. No, to be clear, I don't know the details of this. I'm just saying that there could be a valid reason.
Of course you are.
I honestly don't know the details.
Of course you all.
All right. Well, I don't know what the topics
are. Gosh, Teresa, where are you?
Right.
I'm left alone with these guys, and this is what happens to the round table.
Yeah.
What Rosemary used to do was just slap them around a little bit. It worked really well. Our email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Keep your letters brief, to the point, on topic. Don't include links. We can't click them on the air. There are certain people who are very smart who write us 19-paragraph letters after hours, and they're very interesting, and I enjoy them. We will not read them on the air.
Some of us don't even read them because they're too long.
Yeah.
We get hundreds of letters here every day.
You know, my rule would be, if it was my show, don't write except when the show is on the air.
Well, I think
we will not read them.
By the way, I think to some degree that is the rule.
Yeah.
You know, people write. I wake up and I look at my email at 12 o'clock at night, and there is, some 92-paragraph letter, sometimes using,
naughty words.
Naughty words.
Like we use in the newsroom when you and I are arguing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't use abbreviations. Don't, put bad words in your emails, and don't send more than one per day. And again, the email is panel@wamc.org. All right, Joe delayed.
He's here.
He's here.
I just heard on my thing, ding. So I looked at it, and it said, Joe is walking in.
Joe's walking in the door.
Joe's walking in.
Tell you what we'll do there. He's not, according to our engineer. All right, well, we'll start the first topic. I don't know what the topics are.
Says walking in. You think this thing lies? Look, Rob is looking at we have a security system here. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at, who's coming out of where, and he'll be able to tell us whether it's not true or not. But it does say walking in.
Are we sure it's not prancing?
It's not like Skynet.
Given the morning he's had, I doubt he's prancing.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we, if he's actually coming in, why don't we play a little bumper music there, Mr. Maestro, in the engineering room? I'll make way for Joe, and we'll move on. And if he doesn't show up, I'll come back. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 19 minutes after 9 o'clock. Stand by for infotainment. Okay, we're back on the Roundtable, 20 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray's still in for Joe. There has been a sighting. He's in the parking lot.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Well, let's read a few letters, and then Joe will be here. Right.
Peter writes,
yes.
The third traumatic event that my feeble brain was trying to remember, of course, is divorce.
Oh, okay.
Divorce is the third. There's death, and there's those things. And what? Divorce.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a good event.
Sometimes.
It could be.
Some people say that.
Yeah. But it's not even on your list because you're so happy and contented.
47 years.
47
years.
That's great.
That's
a mazel tov to you, sir.
47 years, that's a mazel tov. Okay. And so now Ellen writes, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If anyone thinks their vote doesn't count, just ask Connor Lamb. It's being reported he won by 20 votes. I had heard it was more than 20 votes.
Hey, everybody.
I had heard his number went up. Hey, guess who's here?
Joe Donahue was interviewing for Tillerson's job.
That's right.
Last night, and so he had to fly back here early this morning.
That's right, David Soares. You're right. Okay, but the last thing I had heard is it was several hundred votes, and that it went up as a result of the absentee ballots. But things do change.
Absentee ballots were counted in the middle of the night last night.
Now right.
We have a higher total this morning.
I think there's still one more county left.
Yes. County.
Green, right?
One county that they're waiting on, and I believe several Republican officials are saying they don't believe that even that would be, there's not enough votes, even if every vote would come in
for the Republican that it would be enough to change. But then they could also, of course, ask for
But Ellen's good point here, even if she's wrong about the 20, and she may be right, but her good point is if anyone thinks their vote doesn't count, just ask Connor Lamb.
Right.
Okay. And Jill says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Could you discuss the student walkouts? I heard yesterday that authorities in some school districts were threatening to suspend students for 3 days if they left class. This is so unfair and downright callous. These authorities care more about rules and discipline than the students' justified grief and anger, not to mention their lives. So what if all students in a school walk out? What will they do? Suspend the whole school? So ridiculous. School authorities should just let them walk. Better yet, walk out with the students. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yes.
We'll get that on our docket.
I know you will, Joe. And I have to say, you know, back in the day when I was a student, that was a long time ago, they would talk about putting it on your permanent record. Which now turns out to be a mark of distinction that you did that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, at that
time.
Well,
and many colleges are saying that they will not, A, look at that.
Hold it against you.
It will,
perhaps
even help the process. Yes.
And then Bob writes, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
I can't believe we have this many letters. We're just really not talking about anything. But okay, go ahead.
Please ask David to give us a better understanding of what's going on with the unsigned non-disclosure agreements and secret arbitrations. Also, the legal ethics side of Cohen's actions on Trump's behalf. Well, David, as in David Gustina, do you think?
Source, yeah. I would assume.
Oh, David
Gustina. Our DA.
Oh, yeah,
the man here on the show.
The guy across the table.
There he is.
The guy with the legal background. Hi.
Well, hello.
What do you got?
Well, that's going to be an interesting issue once it's actually litigated. Cohen, the fact that we believe that there is in fact a contract. I mean, I think Stormy Daniels, through her representation, can argue otherwise. They can talk about the lack of signatures. But in my humble estimation, given the fact that all parties acted in a way that demonstrated, you know, that they were both abiding by the terms of the agreement, you know, I think you'd have to say that they had an agreement. And
but what happens if you break the agreement? I mean, what happens?
Well, you'd have to, if you break the agreement, one would have to sue for damages, and it would be quite interesting to see what the damages would be to a president and his reputation.
But we can assume, right? Because you're sort of between a rock and a hard place here. Because if you sue, you're also kind of saying, well, yeah, we right?
Normally, people don't engage in that in a lawsuit. When it's dealing with issues that are issues that you're trying to prevent from becoming public, because if you begin that process, then you're going into depositions, right? And
so now
you're subjecting yourself to, you know, one of the most intense, you know, question and answer segments that I don't think that this president would ever want.
I mean, we now know that 60 Minutes is expected to run this interview very soon. We also know that the interview exists, so it's there. Mm-hmm. And also we have found out that Stormy Daniels was a guest on a shock jock radio show, Bubba the Love Sponge.
That's
right. Don't you know?
A name that you were seeking to take, but was already taken.
Yeah, I tried in court, but yeah.
But Joe, I do think that there was a clause in the contract that said she would be out $1 million, something like that, per occurrence, as a penalty if she didn't.
The point here, which is interesting about the radio show, is that it was before this contract was even drawn up, and she was already talking about the affair.
Right.
So, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So we pretty well know what the deal is even before. But now the interesting thing that is that her lawyer is talking about, if they let us out of this, if we could pay you back the money, then we'll have other things that we want to talk about, like tapes. Email messages.
Oh, they're
maybe
definitely
videos.
They're putting out breadcrumbs, letting you know what's out there. And I think what they want to do is cash in on this opportunity that is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Because the first time that I had heard that they paid her $130,000 in exchange for her keeping her mouth shut. I'm saying to myself, $130,000? This is information that's worth millions and millions of dollars. And I think the calculus right now from their side is, even if they were to be sued, there's a whole lot more money to be made out of books, appearances,
absolutely,
and relaunching her career. Now, what's interesting is this this proposal to sue and seek an injunction against CBS from moving forward and engaging in this interview, which is not going to be successful at all. But then you ask the question, why would they even look to attempt to do this and claim that there's some national
security
interest in preventing an adult sex worker from interviewing with CBS? It's a little strange, but
from my knowledge, and it's basically the same argument in the same suit that they did against Michael Wolff in trying to block Fire and Fury from being published.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And how did that work for them in terms of selling?
Still number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
That book. And so what I don't understand is we know that this president has impulse control, and he's the person who's guiding a lot of these actions, but you know, if you're an attorney, if you're an experienced lawyer, if you're an experienced, counsel to the president, don't you just say, hey, stop. Look, we're not going to do this, because all you're doing is elevating the conversation.
So, David, something must be scaring them. So here's this porno star who basically is used to being filmed. And one of the things I think that was said by her lawyer is we would be free to use certain videos. Can you imagine what that video what that video might look like?
The only security interest here is his own security, because Melania, she don't look too happy these days. Not that I'm seeing much of her anywhere.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the idea that, she had just given birth to her child and their child, and here he is in a golf tournament in California somewhere having an affair with a sex worker is just, absurd. And I think for his own... for the sake of his own marriage, I think that's why he's aggressively pursuing this as he is. Because this is a man who brags about his escapades so freely.
So, but right. you keep saying sex worker. Is sex worker the same thing as? Because I always thought sex worker was a prostitute.
You're getting paid to have sex,
right?
Or the general getting paid to have sex.
Well, if you go to get into advocacy, it's a whole different field. There's like a very diversified range of that, but for this, all intents and purposes, in this case, she is a porn actress.
Yeah, right. And Maureen says, why have any sympathy for an Exxon executive whose arrogance was on full display? Any thoughts as to whether our democracy can be saved? I think our democracy can be saved, should be saved, and we all have to work on it. That's what I think.
All right, we have David Soares, Joe Bonilla. We also... We have voices that are coming up as well. We have Jen Smith, Alan Chartok. We will take a break. When we come back, we will get into the full docket here of stories. It is panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. As advertised, we have a lot to talk about, so we will get to that, WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this snowy Wednesday. It's the 14th of March. We are very happy that you are with us. We're also happy that we have Alan Chartok here on the panel, as well as Jen Smith from the Berkshire Eagle, communications consultant Joe Bonilla, and Albany County District Attorney David Soares. Thank you all for being with us. So let us get to, we'll try to kind of immerse ourselves into the topics that we have identified and get into as many as we possibly can, because there's a lot to talk about, and we will we'll work through. We talked about the Pennsylvania House race, and a lot of that's wait and see. We're hoping that we'll get the final vote, but then to see what the legal machinations are on that. But I don't think we've fully discussed what this means for the Republicans and even for the Democrats. This was a district that Donald Trump won by 20 points. It is a weird race because it's only up until November, mm-hmm, until it gets changed. Right. And then whoever wins, if we assume that it's Lem, that then at that point they have to decide what district they're going to run in. Mm-hmm. So what does it say? What does it say to us about the state of the Republican Party as advertised? In chaos.
In chaos. I think there are two things that I took from this campaign. A, it is so important to have a very good message, a message that connects with people, because I think at the end of the day, what this race has demonstrated is whether you're in a red district or a blue district, if you have a message that connects with people at a very core level, people are going to support you. And that's the thing that I think nationally the Democrats have forgotten, but obviously something that Mr. Lamb was very mindful of. Secondly, the thing that I really admire about the race was the fact that, you know, Mr. Lamb knew who his constituents were. He didn't, you know, deviate from his message in terms of being sort of anti-Pelosi, anti-establishment. He certainly was an advocate for firearms, and he's respectful of the Constitution. But you know, he doesn't believe in, I believe he doesn't believe in abortion, but he's respectful of the Constitution. So, as far as the issues are concerned, he played it absolutely perfectly, you know, for the audience that he needed to, you know, assist him in getting these votes. And so I think it's a lesson for the Democratic Party that these purity tests that they can, they're so consumed by, are tests that you cannot impose on candidates who are running in very difficult communities. So bring back the Blue Dog Democrats. I don't know what you would call Mr. Lamb. Would he be a blue dog or, you know, Senator
Manchin? Moderate. Right, the moderate Democrats. Yeah.
I think he's a blue dog. I think you're right.
Yeah, but I think that's the one thing, right, that you look at this race as a bellwether for what could happen actually in November as well.
Absolutely.
And you look at 2010, you had a number of moderate Democrats that were brought into the fold. 2006, when Democrats took over the House. So this could be very well an indicator of that. But you look at the district in southwestern Pennsylvania, in the heart of what could be Trump country, coal country, right outside Pittsburgh, and you look at the impact of this. But Democrats, in order to win, need to be more open of allowing moderate Democrats like Connor Lamb become more into the fold.
Well, not only that, there are a couple of things. One is that we have to at least acknowledge that this was all about Trump. This was a plebiscite on Trump. Number two, you have to have a good candidate. You have a bad candidate, you're not going to win. So this guy was attractive, tall, you know, tall is important in politics, and a former prosecutor like you, David, and a former, Marine, whatever. And the other guy, I'm sorry, I watched him on television. I think I'm being fairly accurate, was a bit of a schlumpf. Schlumpf isn't good, and you can't beat anybody with no one.
Right.
But I think what if you compare this special election to, what we saw in Alabama, too, you have to let the candidates speak for themselves. I think, you know, Roy Moore banked on having Trump speak for him. Saccone banked for having Trump speak to him. And it didn't work out. Again, you have to know your audience. You have to, if you looked at the suburbs and where their attitudes and conversations were changing, you would have been able to, you know, use that as a litmus to say, you know, this is how I need to run my campaign. And their advisors should have advised that as well. And we saw how that didn't work out the weekend prior leading up to the elections, where you hardly saw Saccone at all. And I think that was problematic. And, you know, as to what this indicates, it's tough because, again, you're looking at these special elections, which have, you know, sort of shorter term outcomes, but what will be accomplished in, you know, from the midterm to November is going to say much more. Another thing, I can't even imagine what it's like to be for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette today after they endorsed Saccone under much controversy, too.
Yeah. Did Trump make a mistake in having that rally? Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
I think he did. I mean, the first time you see the rally. Now, if you're someone who's disillusioned with politics, the first time you attend a rally and you hear a guy say the things that he said, you get rah-rah,
yeah.
Right?
You get energized. You're pumped up.
You get pumped up and you go. But then he comes back, and it's like you've seen the movie before. Like, right. Wait a second. Okay,
well, it's a greatest hits tour. It's like exclusive Aerosmith. Right, yeah, right. I mean, it's you just expect to hear the Walker Up and the.
Yeah. Right. So it's been a year and a half.
Right.
You come back and you're saying these things, but all I'm reading every day is the number of people that are either being fired or quitting. You passed a great tax break, but it hasn't necessarily trickled down to me yet, mm-hmm. and so I thought it was a mistake, and I think that I think. What was funny here is that they were taking the electorate for granted, much like the Democrats have been taking the electorate for granted as well. But in this instance, I think the Democrats did what they were supposed to do.
So you are. Let's say you're a Republican candidate in Ohio, in a swing state right now, in a fringe district, and we fast forward a couple of months, and the White House calls up and says we'd like to come in and have a rally.
No rally.
Thanks, but no thanks.
You run for cover, right?
No rally. I mean, and here's the other thing. Why, if the Republicans are so proud of what they've managed to achieve over the course of the last year and a half, why aren't the candidates on the ground running on those achievements? Mm-hmm. They're not running on those achievements because those achievements haven't trickled down to impact on the people that right. they need these votes from.
And, you know, looking from an economic standpoint, too, I mean, what does it say to your Pennsylvania voters when you see how much investment was wasted, essentially, in, you know, these campaigns? And what does it help? It shows that, you know, money doesn't even talk in the same regard anymore. And if you do spend it, you have to spend it wisely. And I think, again, it's, you know, knowing, as you said, David, the electorate and what they're, you know, wanting.
But I guess the other thing, too, right, and going off Joe's point, I mean, how much more can the president actually rally and barnstorm for candidates in the midterm? And now we're seeing the effect of it's really not working for Republican mm-hmm. candidates. Will he continue to still do the same thing? And then you could see further loss with the GOP in the fall.
There was something that I thought was kind of interesting in that maybe I was dreaming it, but I think I saw it on one of the cable networks that the actual rally was not in the district but right over the line from the district, which may have meant that he was looking for deniability.
Well, he did the same thing in Alabama. He did in Florida. Yeah, the rally. Yeah.
So you know, just rewind here for a moment and think about the different space we'd be in right now had this president, you know, been sworn in and immediately took on a large package for, you know, interior improvements, right? So building roads, you know, building bridges.
Sure.
That would have meant so much to the very, you know, population of people that went and voted for a Democrat last night. But instead, mm-hmm. his ego couldn't take it and he had to just repeal Obamacare, which just furthered, you know, the animus in the country. And I don't understand what his legislative pursuits have been and how he believes that those legislative pursuits could result in the dividends in the midterms.
It's a great question, and it really comes back to a sort of egotism, which we are seeing so much of here. As I said in a morning commentary, look, you know, you take a look at all the great despots in history. When things begin to go wrong, they don't say, let's bring some more experts in. You see some guy with a mustache looking over the war plans and saying, this is what I want you to do. Now he's a general. So if you're following me, so that seems to me to be what's going on. The more people who leave, I'm finally getting the cabinet I need. Wait a second. You mean the finally getting the cabinet you need? Well, whose cabinet was this?
Right. Yes.
Did Obama leave you this cabinet? No, you appointed this cabinet.
Nick Confessori had the best line. I think I heard it yesterday on one of the shows. Nick Confessori from the New York Times said, you know, this man has said that he's finally getting the people that he wants around him. What he wants are acolytes.
Right.
The people that he's getting rid of, that he's shedding, are people who have their own ideas and people who are experts. But his problem is that his acolytes cannot get security clearance.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the quality of people that he wants closest that will obey him are people who are borderline criminals.
I would refer all of you to the best cartoon I have seen in 25 years this morning in the New York Daily News. which I cannot describe over the radio, or we might lose our license. But it involves.
Well, we've started. That's yes. good.
The way you talk about the president, you might be losing it anyway.
Yeah. But it involves a long line of people. Let's say just behind the president.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Understood.
Putting on lipstick.
I want to take a break here, but before we do, because I want to move on to a lot of the other stuff that we have to talk about. One of the things that Connor Lamb kept on saying in this, they kept on saying in this campaign, and made a point of it, made an ad about it, is his lack of support for Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. I am curious as to, A, given his, assuming that he has won this race, which we don't know, assuming that he, and knowing that he is right now short-term, depending on what happens, you know, after November, what does that mean for other Democrats who are running, who are going to come up against the same Republican attacks against Nancy Pelosi? Connor Lamb decided to say, I'm not with her. What will other Democratic House candidates say?
So we're not taking a break. We're going to go to this question for
I'm
right
going
now.
To ask this okay. question, and then I'm going to move
okay.
on.
Okay, so very quickly, I have to say, I do the Congressional Corner, as you know, Joe, on your show every day, and I ask that question. I always ask, do you like Nancy Pelosi? And there is overwhelming love for Pelosi. So I think the fact, but when she polls, she doesn't poll well. And so I think in order to win, they say something like that. But I don't believe she's in danger.
But if you get pummeled by the Republicans, and it works in this case, seemingly it worked to partially to the advantage of saying, okay, well, I think we should have a change in leadership. Will we see other House Democrats, House Democratic candidates do that?
I think I think it's different when you're running than when you're actually right. serving. And so I don't think that will be an issue once he begins to serve. I do, however, believe that once he gets in, I think every Democrat understands that they must deliver for his district. And he's got to be able to deliver for that district in order to maintain that seat.
Well, but Joe's right. question still, I think, is an excellent one.
Oh, it is.
Does he call her this morning?
You run against Pelosi because that's what you're being pummeled with.
Yes. So, the concept of her.
Yeah, hey,
if it works, you do it.
Exactly. Right.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have a lot to talk about, and we will get to those stories right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, David Soares, and we also have Joe Bonilla here as well. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. A couple of things that I want to mention that are, we touched the student protests, so I'm not going to say a whole bunch more on that.
We don't touch students, Joe.
No, we touched on the subject, David. Don't stop.
I just wanted to make one point on the student protest.
Yes, please.
So 15 years ago, I was going to Albany High, and we had Books Not Bombs, and we all walked out of Albany High. It was actually my first PR experience, actually. I got interviewed by Rick Carlin and Phil Bailey at the time, but the administrators did not suspend anybody. It was a peaceful protest. We had about probably 100 students to walk down from Albany High to New York State Capitol and then back uptown. And these students right now, It encourages me so much to see them actually being organized, activated, and speaking out.
And in Schuylerville, I understand, they're threatening the students with 3-day suspension or something like that. I may have that wrong, but we've got a couple of letters.
Yeah, there's a big ACLU campaign to remind students of their rights, to know their handbook policies, to encourage them to work with administrators and advocate for their rights to not be disciplined for this action. And as Joe had mentioned before, the colleges have stepped up to allay any fears that if you're reprimanded in your high school, that it will not count against you in admissions, which is, of course, something that is worried about. But I think the students that I've talked to in the Berkshires and beyond, it's going beyond just the walkouts and the protest. Right. They're talking with each other. I mean, across the states, they're talking with each other. They're thinking ahead towards going to D.C. They're bringing legislators in. We have a forum tonight in the Berkshires in Pittsfield from 6 to 8 at Barrington Stage Company. We'll be talking about that, and we'll be talking to local students who are on our panel who will be fresh out of their walkouts today.
And that's your beat, right, Jen?
Yes, it is.
Education's your beat.
I just want the record to reflect that she said the Berkshires and beyond.
That's right.
So we're beyond. We're beyond.
Yeah, we're beyond.
That's all. That's fine.
I think we do that, by the way.
Yeah.
I hear adults complain about kids and playing games and
damn kids these days.
And it's like, are you kidding me? Here are a group of kids who've just been motivated. They've been woke, as popular to say, and they're taking on an issue, and they're talking to their administrators. They're seeking advice. They're not looking for leadership from the administration. They're just asking. Mm-hmm. This is the most impressive thing. And what I don't understand is why there is this element out there that, okay, we're going to look to suppress people's votes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now, with young kids who are for the first time, exposing themselves to this process, we're also going to look to suspend them and punish them for doing
well,
that.
And I also,
this is the United States of America. Hello.
I think it's important to realize and recognize that this is a coming of age moment for them.
Right.
They're not just kids, quote unquote, just kids. They are young adults who will be voting within the next year. Some of them might be able to vote in November.
Sure, well, that's what they're scared of.
And we hope they'll vote, right?
Yes, absolutely. And they know that. And they're working to sign their fellow students up to get them educated on the issues. They're asking the right questions, which makes me so proud as a journalist to hear good questions being asked.
Well, Jen, this is so interesting because look at what they got done in Florida.
Yeah, right.
They went down to Tallahassee after everyone else couldn't do anything. We have wonderful people. I talk to Congresswoman Elizabeth Esty all the time on this show, and I did just yesterday. And, they've done their best. They had terrible, terrible thing in that district, Sandy Hook and all the rest. They couldn't get it done. The kids are getting it done. Hey, that's terrific.
Right.
And they're getting it done at a moment where they should be reflecting inwardly and dealing with their own personal trauma. Mm-hmm. But they've managed to turn this thing, inside out. And they're demanding something be done. Mm-hmm. And that's just so admirable. And the fact that now they've caused this sort of electric chain reaction in local districts, and other students are waking up to this issue and advocating for public safety. It's just brilliant.
And they're also moving on to other issues, too. And it's I think it's interesting because as they're talking about, they're also talking about our safety, our security, which includes the climate, which I think is really
absolutely
interesting, too.
And it elevates that conversation is something that we've traditionally looked at as soft skills. It doesn't involve the Regents or the MCAS or Smarter Balanced. It's something that involves social emotional skills and building empathy and being aware and not being a bystander when you see something that's amiss. But it's also holding accountable to authorities to respond when you see something and you say something. It's a rhetoric that's repeated over and over again. And I think these young people are also joining a rich history of young activists in our nation and across the world. The same thing happened, a few years ago. This is a letter that's gone viral in Britain, where, again, there was a school shooting that killed more than a dozen students, injured multiple others. And the young people in Britain lobby their legislator, except for their legislator listened and responded rather quickly compared to the pace of our nation and what's been going on. I come from in the 90s where we had a school shooting at Simon's Rock in Great Barrington. And then I grew up with Columbine and Virginia Tech, and I covered Sandy Hook. Not to mention all the other atrocious things that happen to young people these days, but I think there is no better time than now to leverage that moment. And they're savvy enough, organized enough to do so. And now they're gaining more support as adults and actual legislators are learning to listen.
The key, though, is for them to stay involved, engaged, not just this year, but obviously getting involved, registering to vote, but just learning the issues and being right there and present. You always see time when you have these movements where folks are in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then down the road, they see, we've gotten some success, and then we're no longer involved, and that's how things start to fall apart. So as long as they stay involved and they have so much energy right now, keep up the energy.
These kids are so locked in. I mean, and I have the same concern. And I think what they have going for them is the fact that they've used their platform to go to the Capitol and get change. But I think the other thing that they have going for them is the fact that we know, right, somewhere in this country, somewhere in this world, there's going to be something else that happens. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be able to leverage, you know, those experiences as well. I think the one person who is not sleeping these days is Marco Rubio.
Mm. Probably.
They have yeah. set their sights on that guy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was this has gone viral too, but there was a Florida legislator who took to the floor and was saying, you know, who are these kids? They don't, you know, we shouldn't, they're just kids, they don't know anything. And I was really struck by how blind it was to what was going on. The kids' response, though, was fascinating because it was, look, we're kids. We have to be 16 to drive. We have to be 18 to vote. We mm-hmm. have to be 21 to buy beer. We have to get a license to drive. We have to all of the stuff that you adults make us do. Yet anybody can walk into a store, get a gun, and wreak havoc on our daily lives.
Right.
So we have a say in this.
And Joe, I wanted to just point out a letter from our friend Ben, who's written to us this morning, who says, punishing children trying to protect their lives. You know, we've had a very intellectual discussion here about empowering young people and all the rest of it. But let's remember what this is all about.
True.
Somebody walking into their, potentially walking into their school and killing them. Mm-hmm. And that is why this is so poignant.
Yeah, you know, what's impressive here is that they've done the thing that the most powerful person in all of the world, that being the President of the United States, they've managed to do something that he hasn't been able to do, which is take on the NRA mm-hmm. and, at least for the moment, beating them in the state of Florida.
Right. Truly not afraid of the NRA.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, I think it comes from an authentic place. And I think looking ahead, it will be interesting to see, you know, how these young people balance being young people and doing things like, you know, just also having lives, because I think there's a lot of pressure on these students too. When I, you know, hear from adults, they're really grilling them on, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Right.
Instead of, you know, having the shared accountability of like, how can we help? What can we do collectively as a community? And I also think it's really interesting that, you know, we've seen young people activists before. We've seen them step out, you know, with the transgender bathroom issue. We heard so many cases about bullying and treatment with DACA and the Dreamers. They've been at it for years. So it's really fascinating to me that this case in particular is the unifying and most mobilizing case of young activists we've seen.
We've got about a minute and a half. I just want to real quick mention, as we move on, we come back, we'll go to letters, and we have many other topics to discuss, not the least of which is we still want to touch a little bit on Rex Tillerson. We have to talk about the Joe Percoco trial. Oh, all kinds of good stuff. I do want to mention the passing of Stephen Hawking, 76 years old, a Cambridge-educated physicist who obviously fought, it was ALS, correct?
Yeah.
I believe,
mm-hmm.
yes. 76 and passed away. And the obituary, reading that, the Times obituary is just, I mean, the accomplishments of this man under such duress is just stunning.
The NPR story this morning was so interesting. It said that he recognized that he wasn't going to live a long life, so therefore he had to pack as much in as he possibly could, which is interesting because he did live to 76 years old, something I know a little about.
I would debate that term because I think a person like him lived his life a lot longer than most of us, even though it
right.
was measured by time.
Yeah, because so much was done and accomplished, and the work is left for us, thank God. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversations. We have letters. We have many stories to talk about. We'll do all of that right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. It is 5 minutes past 10 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Joe Bonilla, and David Soares. Alan has a fistful of letters. We'll get to those and move on to other topics.
Okay, good morning. Even if this alleged affair with Stormy Daniels is proven true. Even if we see photos, the videos, and the hush money, it won't make a lick of difference to his base. They will continue to support him. Ugh. And there was a much longer letter, but I'm going to read just that.
Yeah, line. I disagree. Once you see the photos, that changes the whole thing. You know, when you look at folks that have done with crises.
We had him on the bus.
Right. Right. So again, you see the photos, boom.
I'm going to pose a theory here. But, you know, to me, it's less important how his constituents react to him in the context of this scandal. It's less important. What's more important to me is to see the hypocrisy of those people who shape opinion. For example, the evangelicals who have been, you know, saying, oh, we're going to give him a mulligan on this. Well, yeah. You've just destroyed your credibility, and no one's going to take you serious right. The next time that someone comes, could be a Democrat,
right.
And the next time someone comes around and you all of a sudden want to condemn them. So yeah. I think that the relevance of Stormy Daniels, aside from knowing that her first pet dog was named Stormy and she lived on Daniels Avenue, I think that the relevance here is that she is going to take down all of those characters who you know condemn the
like
past
that.
President
yeah.
and future presidents.
So, nicely done.
So Tony writes, students, whole bunch of old white administrators still acting as a hammer to students' nail. They are turning things upside down. Go, students! Do not be cowed by these administrators whose time has passed them on. And that's Tony. Thank you, Tony. And then from Jessica, dear panel, whereas it is unfortunate that many school districts find it necessary to punish students for participating in this protest, it isn't surprising. Additionally, it is great practice for these students to be able to take a stand for something they are passionate about, even in the face of objection from the institutions they are part of. This last scenario is much better preparation for their future. That's right. When you think of all of the civics courses that kids slump down in their chairs and, you know, their minds wander. And here is an engagement which will be more civics for them than anything else that you could possibly name.
I think those administrators from those schools that are looking to do that are buying themselves more problems.
Mm-hmm. And I think the part of the problem, though, has come from not talking about it. The problem that I've heard from students is that there was no time made in school to talk about what's going on, to talk about something that affected people very deeply, their age, and they're grappling with it. You have to make the time and you have to really hear them out to do that. And as I look at the clock now, we have literally thousands of students, probably in the million range, you know, more across not only this nation, but the globe, standing outside, standing for something and believing
But there will always be people on the other side.
Absolutely.
So, for example, when my wife, all those years ago, Roselle, started the first, with her colleague Jack Spencer, the first Holocaust unit in the United States of America, made the New York Times, a deputation showed up saying this was anti-German. You know, there will always be somebody who comes up with an answer on this. And a dear snowy friend says, Scott, my children are involved in the walkout at their school, Lenox, this morning. I'm incredibly proud of my kids and students across the country for representing themselves, organizing with like-minded students, coordinating with school faculty and staff, and voicing their concerns. History teaches that student movements create future leaders. I am one proud and hopeful dad.
Keep them involved.
Yeah.
And for the kids, too, who don't feel like walking out today, I think it's also really important to acknowledge them and why they're not doing that, too. I think there's been a struggle to look at the multiple sides. And if you look at some of the people who are at risk of perpetrating different crimes, feeling like they're outsiders, I think it's, again, to hear your whole student body.
Christina says, timing of the Tillerson firing. Good morning, panel. Is there any chance that our president fired Mr. Tillerson to focus the news cycle on the day of the special election in Pennsylvania? They certainly knew from polling that they were in trouble. That's Alan speaking. On an image akin to his reality TV persona and away from the Stormy Daniels story, paranoid in Vermont, Christina. And then Marcella says, The timing of Rex Tillerson's firing. Dear panel, Theresa May was going to confront Russia about the attack of two Russians on UK soil and would have been looking for solidarity among the allies. Solidarity she would have found with Tillerson. Perhaps that was the final straw. Post Tillerson, Trump has said he will look at the information and make his decision. Lukewarm, we'll see.
Well, she just expelled 20 Russian spies, I guess undeclared Russian spies, out of the UK this morning.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And Ray says, good morning, panel. Thanks for the wonderful group of participants today. Looking at the high school students walking out today in protest over gun violence, it occurred to me that for the first time that one day is not in the not too distant future, we may see the end of public schools where numbers of students gather for learning. It may simply be too dangerous. The mass shootings of schools is increasing in frequency. Our legislators are unable to solve it. Now, with the advent of video classes where students can learn at home or in other remote locations, schools with buildings may go the way of the dinosaur.
Well, you can't live and work in isolation rest of your lives, and I don't think that's a positive solution. But I think it's a reality that schools are facing, too. If you do look at the homeschool numbers, they are going up in certain areas, and you need to address that. And that's why, all the more reason why this needs to be addressed.
And you know what, Jen? It's also true, this letter and what you've just said, of colleges. More and more of my colleagues, you know, who are doing these courses in which they never lay eyes physically on the student. I think there's some real questions to be asked about that. And what's behind that one, I think, is money. But we'll see. Michael says, Dem purity test, this blue dog thing is a distraction. To me, a blue dog Democrat is someone who freely accepts money from special interest corporations. Dismissing them because they're running in districts that are more right than left is not the problem. It's trusting them. And how can one be trusted if they continue to accept this tainted money? Bernie and others have proven that accepting money is not necessary to be competitive. And Michael says, there will always be purists. They will vote for a third-party candidate. They'll vote for Ralph Nader and see what they get.
Right.
What can I tell you?
Well, he should really look up the word gerrymandering and understand that we're living in that context right now.
You bet. Michael says, the head spy, so a new Secretary of State used to be the head of our spy agency, the CIA. Think of how this must appear to the rest of the world. This is the kind of thing that Russia does, and that's Mike in Rexford. But what Mike doesn't mention here is that she was a torturer.
True.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, every single day we're losing credibility with the rest of the world. So it's just a matter of just taking a deep breath and holding on for dear life for the next, you know, 2.5 years.
And John McCain, by the way. You know, every once in a while, he really fools you. You think he's where he should be, and he isn't. Mm-hmm. But today, he's out there on torture, I'll tell you right now. Because here was a guy who was tortured. And he says, you know, if you allow that to go on, if you torture them, they'll torture you. And he's right about that.
But this is a man who surrounds himself with people who don't have an understanding or an appreciation for history.
Mm-hmm.
Jim says, I have more trust. Hi, Jim. I have more trust for China's leader Xi than our own POTUS. But then again, I'm speaking safely from my home in America. Jim, I know Jim. Steven says, stormy days. Good morning, all good people. All the stuff about Stormy and everything, really.
Clever.
Yet he persists firing people via Twitter. Why have our elected officials not taken any action, even moral ones, to move this guy along? How frustrating, Steve. And Steve, you know the answer to that as well as all of the rest of us.
We may just be living in a time when the only member of Congress that I think most people remember is McCarthy, right? But we're living in a time where these people, the House Intelligence Committee, we're living in a time where they're all making history.
Right.
And people will remember them forever. And that's the thing that they're not appreciating right
now.
That
is disgusting what Nunez and that committee have done.
So,
and they really are getting it back on them right now, and they're beginning to waver. The committee chairman is wavering, said, I didn't exactly mean that. Joe, I'm sorry.
Well, so let's talk about it. So the Republican leading the House's Russia inquiry softens the key finding, being that the Russians weren't working with the Trump administration to get him elected. The Republican leading the House Intelligence Committee's investigation into Russia election interference softened his characterization of a key investigative finding on Tuesday, just after Republicans announced that they had completed a draft of their report. Michael Conaway of Texas, who was leading the inquiry, had told reporters on Monday that the committee's Republicans had extensively reviewed 2017 assessments by American intelligence agencies and found only one area of disagreement, that Russians had favored Donald Trump's candidacy. "We disagree with the narrative that they were trying to help Trump," Mr. Conaway said. Speaking again with reporters on Tuesday after American intelligence officials, Democrats, and even Republicans on the committee appeared to dispute that conclusion, Mr. Conaway said it was a matter of interpretation whether the Republicans were, or excuse me, that the Russians were trying to hurt Hillary Clinton, Mr. Trump's opponent, or explicitly help his candidacy. The exact quote from him is saying, "Everybody gets to make up their own mind whether they were trying to hurt Hillary or help Trump." He says it's kind of a glass half full, glass half empty. Is it?
No. It's you're entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts here. And clearly the evidence shows that there wasn't interference. Jesus.
My favorite takeaway from the story was Mr. Conaway said on Tuesday that his committee was taking issue with the intelligence agency's quote-unquote analytical tradecraft, suggesting that the analyst had assembled the relevant portion of the assessment using material that typically would not meet their own standards. He never disputed that the Russians had undertaken measures to try to disrupt the election. What is astounding here is a group of people who never subpoenaed records, who never really thoroughly did a job, who never forced any of the people who came before them to testify under oath. They never did that, but yet he's questioning the work and the tradecraft of people who are career specialists in analyzing data for the purpose of gathering intelligence for the safety and security of our country. It is astounding.
It is.
True.
Let us talk about the Joe Percoco trial. We got a conclusion yesterday. The former top aide to Governor Andrew Cuomo was found guilty on Tuesday of three corruption-related charges, a repudiation of the murky backroom dealings in Albany, laid bare during a nearly eight-week trial. The conviction capped a stunning fall for the former aide, Joseph Percoco, once the governor's executive deputy secretary and longtime confidant. He was convicted of soliciting and accepting more than $300,000 in bribes from executives working for two companies with state businesses. Even though Mr. Cuomo, a Democrat, was not accused of wrongdoing, the verdict still underscored ethical lapses and illegal activity at a time when Mr. Cuomo is seeking re-election. In a statement several hours after the verdict, the governor said that while he was saddened for Mr. Percoco's young daughters, he believed there should be no tolerance for lapses of integrity in public service.
Well, look, this isn't good for Andrew Cuomo. You know, he's running. When he ran, and from the first time, he said he was going to be after corruption. Then we all know, or should know, he disbanded his own Moreland Act Commission, which was coming perilously close, we are told, to his operation and how they raise money. He said he was against the LLCs. It was a bad way to do it, and yet he brings in tons of money via his LLCs. So there is no question that this is not good. On the other hand, there's Donald Trump has sucked all the wind out of the political system. You hardly see this. You had to go to the New York thing in the New York Times section to find it as the first story. It was way down on the New York Times' regular top stories group. So I suppose he's thinking good things. In the meantime, we hear that Cynthia Nixon, her wife, has resigned her New York City position working for the de Blasio people, and a lot of people think this is proof that Nixon is deadly serious about running for office, running for governor in a primary. If he's to be beaten, I suspect it's for primary, depending on who the Republican candidate is, because it does look like Mark Molinaro who is a very attractive candidate and who might be a George Pataki, except in the year of Trump. So that's what I have to say to begin with.
Well, this is obviously the opening salvo of a election year wrought with these trials. This is only the first trial. We still have the Calieros trial coming up.
Sure.
And there's still a number of characters that are still linked to the administration for that. But it does not bode well whenever you have an aide that's charged with corruption. It does not look well for the principal. We saw
your
that in
top aide.
Right, your top aide.
Who you eulogized right. in your father's funeral oration, and you said the third brother who my father always
precisely. Yeah. And you look at New Jersey, and you had chief aides for Governor Chris Christie with Bridgegate, right. and you saw what happened with Chris Christie. I mean, he didn't have to go up for re-election again, but you still saw the political damage right there.
Went down to 18%, the lowest in the country. Yeah.
I think oftentimes when we're reading about corruption and government corruption, we tend to focus so much on what it is that we're reading that we tend to stray so far from what the real issues are. And the real issues are, when you look at the state of New York, you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar corporation, and there are people who get to operate that corporation. And the idea that these people are not going to be tempted by folks who want access and want some of that or those resources, I think is foolish. And so it's the very people who we rely on, who run this giant corporation. It's those people that we rely on to develop processes that prevent that kind of influence from taking
place.
Yes,
but couldn't it happen to everybody, David? Couldn't it happen that your top aide turns out to be a crook and that you didn't know a thing about it, which I'm assuming is the case here? Who knows, although there are many people who think otherwise, who think that there were telltale signs of potential corruption. But here's a guy, Cuomo, who stands up before the people and says, let's get rid of the LLCs, and then brings all this money in through these companies. Unbelievable.
There is a philosophical, there are people that criticize me, the political people who criticize me because of I believe that it's dangerous for a prosecutor to be out there having fundraisers every month. I think there's an appearance of impropriety in order to do that. But there's a political reality that you have to run for office.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you can philosophically say that we should place limitations here, here, and here. But if you want to put forth and continue to carry on, your vision of that particular office, you have to get reelected. And so the political reality sometimes can cause a person to compromise their own personal philosophies. But I think that those two things can happen without it having to compromise you ethically and morally as well.
And I think it sounds like it brings back into light a conversation that's always been pushed back about, should the state do more with ethics reform? What does that look like? Who's accountable? And I think it'll be interesting as candidates emerge to run this race, whether it'll be a priority in their platforms or whether this is, something that will continuously, instead of just, referring to the stain on Cuomo's career, will you see a proactive stance being taken from any of the other candidates?
Well, we have seen it again and again. We saw it in this election in Pennsylvania. $12 million apparently was spent by the Republicans to go in there. Donald Trump brought the whole presidency with him to do his thing. And yet the people somehow figured out that Trump's candidate was not their candidate.
Right.
So sometimes it works. It worked with Bernie Sanders. Look, he went a long way. Whether you like him or not, he went a long way on everybody giving him a little bit of money. That's where you find some hope.
And with that, I can think of no better words with hope than closing there. And we thank you all very much for checking in. My thanks to our panel, Alan and Jen and Joe and David. Thank you very much for being here. Safe trip, Jen.
Thank you.
No snowbanks.
All right. Over the wall. You got to get back over the wall.
Over the wall. All right. We'll be back right after this. Wall.